Last week here in Minnesota, we've been living through sub-zero temperatures. Last Friday, a semi flipped over and spilled its load out all over the highway, which were potatoes. And the potatoes froze in this sub-zero temperatures.
You guys are like in Minnesota. You can have a bunch of guys like skate out there with their hockey sticks and clear the highway.
Twitter went crazy with all of these great tweets about it. To the extent of like, watch your spud limit.
Oh boy.
Or another one said, Minnesota road potatoes plus road salt equals halfway to a tater tot hot dish. The best one of all was tots and prayers to everyone out on traffic this year.
There it is. A whole highway full of tots and prayers.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to episode number 260. I am Reed Smith. That is Chris Boyer, and you are listening to Touchpoint.
I'm just busy over here making up a tater tot hot dish, Reed. And from what happened last week, I got some free potatoes off the street.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they can't really go bad, I don't guess. I mean, you're going to peel them anyway. Well, anyway, we'll move on from all produce-related.
Traffic accidents.
Yeah, at this point. Thanks for joining us for yet another week of Touchpoint. We have hit number 260, and I think, we're probably just an episode or two now from, our anniversary show, which would be kicking off year six, somewhere around the 1st of February.
That's right.
So we certainly couldn't do this without you, and we appreciate everybody's willingness to tune in each and every week. If you are new to the show, welcome. I'd like to give a plug for the website, touchpoint.health. If you navigate over there, again, touchpoint.health, you can find out more about the episode that you're listening to today. Check out the show notes, all that kind of fun stuff. You can also learn a little bit more about Chris or I and the show itself, other shows on the network, show hosts, topics, etc. It's all there. While you're there, you'll notice up in the top-hand navigation something called the TPS Report. TPS Report is a weekly email, comes out each Monday, with 5 articles to start your week. That's it. That's all it is. So if you'll click on that, drop your email to us, we'll make sure you get added to that list, and you can start receiving a quick read that'll get you off and started on a Monday morning. Let's pause here for just 1 second, and then we'll be back with today's show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. Reed, I'm excited to talk about today's conversation because we've been thinking a lot about in our hospital and health systems, the role of our hospital brand and how it's changing and shifting in our community.
It's interesting, right? Because, you know, I think there's a difference between our brand, our people that work at the organization, what people think about either or. I mean, certainly the pandemic has heightened awareness, you know, in people's probably perception in one way or the other. But yeah, I mean, brand and brand trust is a big thing.
Yeah, and you're right. People's heightened awareness around just healthcare in general has increased significantly over the last couple of years, obviously, since we're struggling with a worldwide pandemic. But the role of hospitals and health systems, and specifically the role of their brand in alignment with their community, has become even more and more important. As I was thinking about this, wouldn't you know it, Edelman's Trust Barometer came out for 2022.
Yes.
So we thought we'd start off first talking a little bit about that. So what is Edelman's Trust Barometer, Reed?
It's an annual survey, which is actually in its 22nd year.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a lot. It's hard to believe. We'll have links to all this in the show notes, but 28 countries, over 36,000 respondents. So again, this isn't a few hundred folks just weighing in on what they think.
Yeah. Well, and to Edelman, really, they believe that the ultimate currency of the relationship that all institutions have, companies, brands, mm-hmm. et cetera, with their stakeholders is around this concept of trust. Trust defines an organization's ability to operate, lead, and succeed. And they even call out it's the foundation that allows them to organize, to take responsible risk, and if they make mistakes, to rebound from them. So to Edelman, trust and brand go hand in hand.
It's not a logo. It's not what colors and your color palette and your tagline and some of those types of things. I mean, that may be a manifestation of the brand itself. Really is, you know, what people think of you. It's that reputation that precedes you, if you will.
What's interesting about Edelman, they look at all different types of institutions. So companies, governments, NGOs, media, et cetera, as part of this study that they do. And of course, no surprise, we've heard it echoed in other studies that you and I have talked about on the show before. Some of their findings are showing that government and media certainly are having a problem with trust in society. In fact, they almost are seen as being divisive in society. Does that surprise you?
No. We saw it over the time I was at Girard. I think, you know, we did three, and I think they've come out with now a fourth study and survey. And a lot of it was around safety and trust and willingness to return and, you know, those types of things. And trust was leading the pack, was always doctors, nurses, et cetera. But the government, media, local or national elected officials, et cetera, were always at the bottom of that list.
And since they've been doing this study for so long, Edelman has noticed that news sources have been continually kind of slowly declining, but over the last couple of years has seen a significant drop in the trust that they have. They actually moved from above 50% of trust to below 50% of trust. That moves into the what they call the distrust category, which is a challenge, and particularly for those people listening in that are, you know, working with media relations and community outreach and things like that, to see that news sources are failing to fix their trust problem is a big issue here.
You know, we've seen a lot about fake news that continues to be worrisome. Again, that was one of their stats in here. You know, that I worry about false information and fake news being used as a weapon. I mean,
good gracious,
that's high. And you see it in some of the countries, you know, leading the pack like Spain and Colombia, Mexico, et cetera. But even, you know, the U.S. is still pretty high up that list and growing.
In addition to that, they're seeing that government as an institution, and again, this is a worldwide study, right? Government is not being seen as able to solve societal problems. In terms of a leadership role, is the government good at coordinating cross-institutional efforts to solve societal problems? It's dropped to the low 40s. And so, you know, when you think about that in the lens of the global pandemic, that's an interesting reflection of our current times.
People just have this assumption that the government, you know, it says in here, successfully execute plans and strategies that yield results, you know, get results. And government's the lowest out of businesses or media or, you know, whatever it may be. But I like quite a bit. Doesn't bode well.
Well, it doesn't bode well for anyone, honestly. They've seen, too, that institutions are failing to address some of these challenges as well. In fact, they have a specific call out for institutions failing to address existential challenges.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting way to phrase that. And when surveyed about institutions who are not doing well on pandemic response, the majority says they're not doing well. In addition, they asked about climate change. Again, the majority of institutions are failing to address some of these things that are top of mind to people in our society.
Side note, this question was not asked in China.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, they do call that out.
I mean, people continue to struggle with, you know, what's happening, right, around the pandemic. You know, what should be happening, not happening, whether that be state and local government making decisions or businesses themselves, et cetera. I don't know that anybody's too terribly thrilled with the pandemic response.
We're all struggling with that. And on a national and international level, all in governments across the country, across the world are struggling with this. All institutions are struggling. Edelman also believes that leadership can sometimes help to quell the distrust. But when they did a question around societal leaders, they're also challenged with trust. It's interesting. They kind of asked around types of societal leaders, but government, journalists, and CEOs are kind of in that below 50% trust factor. When you get up to higher over to, you know, over to the end where it's closer to 75%, you have scientists there or people in my community in the 62%, even CEOs of my organization that I work for.
See, that's an interesting call out, right? Which is, okay, good. I mean, I'm glad scientists are trusted. That's good, I guess. But it's funny that you've got like my CEO and my coworkers, you know, pretty high on the list. Whereas when we talk about just CEOs in general, they even fall into distrust. So it's almost like it's everybody else.
Absolutely.
Which is kind of interesting. It's just kind of funny to me that it's like CEOs, generally speaking, don't trust them. What about your CEO? No, they're good.
Well, they do a call out of that. They actually highlight that circles of trust are becoming more localized. Where their higher trust levels are in your neighbors, in your coworkers, in your community, there's been a positive increase in trust. That's an interesting dynamic that we're looking at.
That's good, right? Like if you assume everything closer to you is better than stuff further away.
I think what it paints is a picture of that we struggle with, like understanding things at an international, national, even statewide level, but we have a better understanding and a little bit more trust in seeing things happen in our local communities. And I think that that's something that's always kind of been there, but the pandemic has really reinforced that when it comes to everything.
What's interesting is there's a call out in here about that distrust is actually the default and that there's no basis for peaceful debate. Really? Everybody's so amicable on all my social media channels and everything. But, you know, most people, they say his tendency is to distrust until they see something that's trustworthy versus the other way around. And that people lack the ability to have constructive and civil debates about issues they disagree on.
This is where the study gets a little bit depressing. We won't get into all of this. What's interesting is as they start to look at leadership as a core business function, this is something that I think those of us that work for hospitals and health systems can start to take positive note around this. In the study, they say CEOs are expected to be the face of change. 81% indicated that they think the CEO should be personally visible when discussing public policy with external stakeholders or work their company has done to benefit society. It's pretty significant.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think that goes back to some other points they make around the almost 60% buy or advocate for brands based on their values and beliefs. About the same number, 60% choose a place to work based on their beliefs and values. 64% invest based on their beliefs and values. The beliefs and values, as led by the folks that run these organizations, it becomes more and more important.
Well, and even more so, it's not just on their values. There's expectations of the CEO to speak publicly about controversial social and political issues that I care about. Things like racial inequality, things like the climate change, things like pandemic response, right? These are things they expect CEOs to be sort of the face of. Again, 60% of the respondents want that.
CEOs play a big role, or people that run organizations play a big role. That's where they want information. They trust that more than the, you know, general kind of swath of CEOs around the country. So I think it's more and more important as you lead your team, your department, part of the organization, the entire organization, to keep this concept in mind.
There's a whole section in their report this year that talks about breaking that cycle of distrust. And one of the things they indicate is that survey respondents want more, not less, of business engagement on these societal issues. They want these organizations to be out there around climate change, economic inequality, workforce reskilling, access to healthcare, trustworthy information, and systemic injustice. They want more from business leaders to do.
It probably varies, obviously, based on the industry or, you know, kind of where you work. But there are some that probably don't, you know, access to healthcare, the trustworthy information, reskilling in the work and the workforce, that kind of thing.
But when you think about your own brand and hospitals and health systems brand and its relationship to society, this trust barometer really kind of paints a directional picture of what brands can do. But let's do this, Reid. Let's take a brief pause here. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about this whole concept of aligning brands to purpose and share some thoughts around our brands really communicating that value of aligning to purpose with stakeholders. We'll talk about that right after this break.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
All right, now let's shift a little bit. Chris, you found an interesting article over at campaignlive.com entitled, "Are Brands Communicating to Shareholders the Value of Aligning with a Purpose?" And I see that it's written in the year 2022. It kind of threw me off for a second when I first saw that. I thought, wait, when is that? What's that? Is this written in the future? But no, it's like literally, this is where we are now.
Exactly.
You know, are brands communicating the value of the purpose that they're bringing forward?
Yeah, all these things that we talked about before the break, right, about like where the trust is and where people want to build trust within local brands. How do experts, and this article interviews sustainability marketing experts around the world, how they're predicting purpose and sustainability will increasingly become, as they call it, quote, a stick to beat away poor performance, unquote.
A stick to beat away poor performance. Yep. All right. I may have to use that on a slide coming up.
Yeah, but I mean, so they do ask a variety of different stakeholders from different organizations like Forrester and Colgate-Palmolive and even Dole Sunshine Company, right? The pineapple company. They ask these leaders focused on branding and marketing to talk about how are organizations really sharing purpose with their shareholders. The very first part of the conversation, and go to it in the show notes, this article, so you can read more. But one of the experts questions whether the value of purpose is actually being effectively communicated to shareholders. We all know that purpose and profit should work together for sustainable growth, but that connection between purpose and the actual profitable part of your business sometimes isn't being communicated effectively. This expert actually predicts that the emphasis on communications to shareholders should be on the commercial benefits derived from a company that not only produces something people want and need, but also treats its employees well and acknowledges the social and environmental impacts that its company has on society.
Here's another kind of quote out of the article, that businesses bear a huge responsibility in finding systemic solutions to growth models, where they say the people, planet, and prosperity all thrive together, never one at the cost of another. That sounds neat in a sentence. I think that's probably, you know, hard to do, certainly, that you're not having to give up one for the other.
Now, we've heard about purpose-driven marketing before, and we actually talked about how healthcare is purpose-driven as an industry where we're at. People work in our hospitals because of the purpose behind it. I think for hospitals and health systems, it's actually an easier line to tie between that purpose and profit, because that's kind of the DNA of our mission, vision, and values. But in this particular case, it's important for leaders to strike that right balance between those financial and non-financial targets. Another expert quotes here says, sustainability and brand purpose have long-term values, and successful businesses balance both well without undermining their financial performance. It almost speaks to that thread of like business can improve, it can iterate, it can innovate to meet society where we're at. And I think that that's kind of what they're bringing forward here, right? Is that business can change and unite these factors together.
They talk in here about that all organizations have to have a focus on purpose that is far, you know, outside just the idea of, you know, quarterly profits or growth or, you know, growing or whatever it may be. But also talking here that it's true that not all brands within a particular organization need to position purpose as a core part of their brand strategy.
Yeah, but still it's important, right? The reason why your business exists and what it cares for can differ from your brand purpose, but that's okay, they say, as long as it's not going to get go in completely different directions. Now, again, with hospitals and health systems, we're kind of aligned here. Purpose, as they put forward here, has to be authentic and rooted in the DNA of your brand. And this is where some brands get lost. Doing purpose for the sake of doing purpose instead of having a purpose to explain why they exist. Now, I would argue that most hospitals in the country don't have that problem. But, you know, you think about some missteps that other brands have done. This is something that we have an advantage over all the other industries. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, you would hope that our promise, if you will, and purpose is somewhat obvious. Now, again, I think people can argue when we see some of the surprise billing and, you know, some of the things that have happened in the industry that make it a little bit tougher to try to kind of showcase why we're doing it the way we're doing it, maybe.
I agree with you on that. However, you know, at the end of the day, we still have the benefits of having that strong original mission, vision, and values around improving health in our society. And that's really the big point here, which kind of leads us to read the interview I did. I recently spoke with Rob Rosenberg. We know him. He's been on the show a number of times before. He and I had a conversation about the unique role health systems have in using our brand to help lead our societies through some of the challenges they're having with understanding the public health pandemic we're still in and moving to the endemic phase, and how we could start to unmask our marketing and branding efforts. Those are his words, to guide us through. So after this break, we'll come back and we'll listen to the conversation I had with Rob, and then you and I will be back to close out the show. Welcome to the Ask the Expert segment of the podcast. And today we're bringing on someone that is an old-time favorite, someone that has been on the show a number of times before, and that's my good friend Rob Rosenberg. Rob, welcome to the show again.
Hey, Chris. Great to be back with you and lovely to hear your voice as always.
Well, same for you. I know you and I have been keeping in touch. This past 2 years has been kind of very interesting to all of us in the industry, hasn't it?
It has. It has. I look forward to seeing your face in addition to hearing your voice. So it definitely has been.
I appreciate that. And not many people say that, so I appreciate you saying that. Rob, you've been on the show a couple of times before, but some people listening in may not know who you are. So why don't we start off, before we jump into today's topic, share with them a little bit about yourself, your background, and your company.
Okay. Chris, I founded and I'm president now of Springboard Brand and Creative Strategy, and we're a brand communications agency that specializes in healthcare, and this April will be our 20th anniversary, so that's kind of wow. A cool achievement, and very proud of that. We're located outside of the Chicago area in the suburb of Arlington Heights, maybe future home of the Bears. You know, before I founded Springboard, I was a partner in a company. It was really one of the first healthcare, specifically hospital agencies in the country, and was there for about 13 years. So all in all, added all together, about 30 years or so in this crazy business, and glad to still be here and hopefully be relevant.
Well, I think we all are wondering, with everything that we learned before the past 2 years, because we're coming up now on the 2-year anniversary of when the pandemic hit us, right, in the United States. It seems like these last 2 years have done some tremendously different things to our industry. I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
2 years, absolutely incredible. You're right. And hospitals and health systems have really been amazing over the last couple of years, and their employees are real heroes. Their work's been incredible, and you can believe their dream from the pandemic. No question. In fact, we're working with the Illinois Health and Hospital Association, and they're constantly providing support for all of their members, because absolutely the healthcare workers are tired, not only taking care of, you know, the sick, but also their own families. And administrators have really, if you think about them too, they've had to make tough same day decisions on everything from, you know, bed allocations, elective surgeries, staff retention, recruitment, safety protocols and procedures, you name it. I think they're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully they can, you know, return soon to some sense of normal hospital operations.
Yeah, I really hope so too. But, you know, sometimes it feels like this pandemic, and I think we're going to always, for the next few years, refer back to milestones within the pandemic. If you think back, right, at the very early onset, it kind of took the hospitals and health systems by storm. We weren't prepared. And that's when we were dealing with, you know, the shortages in PPE. And there were people out there in the community kind of very like enthusiastically supporting the healthcare workers. I remember, you know, in New York at 7 o'clock at night, people would bang pots and pans outside the windows, right? Yes. Just to say, we're with you and we're all in it together. And we all kind of hunkered down inside. We're trying to do our best to weather through. Now, here we are. I mean, we've gone through that. Vaccines came into the scene, and we were like, oh, good, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, even though we had kind of a bad winter last year, I remember there was like a period of 5 weeks, right, of last summer where we were like, oh my gosh, we're free. And then all of a sudden, here we are back at a Delta, then Omicron and blah, blah, blah. You are indeed right, though. Our industry has been strained to the limits. Yep, you know, and yep. Right now our employees are stressed out. The administrators, while they're being nimble and being really trying to rise to the challenge, I'm just wondering, you know, like all of these things, Rob, must have an impact on hospital brand, on the brand of the hospital.
I think the brand has really taken a backseat to exactly what you referred to over the last couple of years, which is kind of what, you know, I'll call the we're all in it together messaging, which is really common from one health system and hospital to the other. And I think that brand differentiation and messaging has really taken kind of a second tier in terms of where marketers are today. So they're still top of mind, but and it's important to stay top of mind. But I think you'll agree that a lot of, you know, the more competitive messaging that's been out in the market has really kind of blended from one competitor to the other. And let's face it, in a lot of markets, competitors are now collaborators and joining forces to promote all those things you talked about, whether it's, you know, the need to get vaccinated, whether it's the, you know, the need to, you know, about safety protocols within their hospitals. I think the brand has presented itself among all these organizations in different ways and probably appropriate ways, but maybe now is time to start, you know, shifting that a little bit.
So let's talk about how you see us shifting that a little bit, because I think that even in my health system, we're kind of at the point where we're saying, yeah, we do need to start to rethink the way we're approaching our brand. We need to start to rethink about how do we enter the market. And by the way, we not lost on me too, is the consumer mentality has shifted a lot, right? There's still a lot of trust within their care provider, but I was reading some recent studies where they were saying that, you know, they're starting to lose trust in the entity of a health system, so to speak. Does that make sense?
It does. And I guess I'm a little surprised to hear that, because I think that from what I have heard among some clients is their website traffic has been, you know, markedly up. And there's been just a lot more community interactions with the hospital and health systems like at no other time. I mean, you know, since when have hospitals really mattered that much to the community. I mean, let's face it, among those people who don't need them. But today, you know, the hospital leaders are out in front on the news media. The websites are posting information on new numbers and news. And so I think hospitals, you know, in my opinion, have become maybe a little bit more relevant as a result of this, because what we're all facing impacts everybody, not just those who, you know, are undergoing health conditions, but everybody. That's been a little bit of an opportunity for hospitals and health systems to, you know, kind of put that best foot forward.
I understand what you're saying there, right? Is that the healthcare has been top of mind for the last 2 years to just about everybody in the country. And we hear about it all the time in the news, the good, the bad. A lot of times it's the bad, right?
Right.
So now here we are, we're sitting here 2 years in, March 2022. When you start to talk with hospital leaders, what are you starting to help them see the light on? What kind of direction are you giving them?
I think that most are really open now to getting back to a more competitive, differentiated brand position. And that's all in addition to, from a hospital administrator standpoint, renewing their regular operations and, you know, not having to deal with all those things we talked about. So that's first and foremost, they want to, you know, start dealing with the future and not the past and the present. And they really want to, you know, hopefully have a solid workforce that they can depend on, because that's really what's wrapping them up every day. To your point, I really do think that administrators are looking forward to focusing on the future and making sure that, you know, all the issues that they've been faced with in the past, all those that we talked about from recruitment and retention and just getting by day to day, they're really looking at getting back to those goals of patient volume and growth, market differentiation, expansion, physician coverage in the markets, new ideas, new products and services they can put out into the community. And I think that's really, you know, where they're starting now to maybe lean a little bit, still having to deal with this day to day, but still starting to look at generating community presence and consumer preference, because ultimately that's where their growth will come from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's more of that they have now a leadership role of being involved in their community, being part of that voice of healthcare, quite frankly.
Totally. Yes.
You also mentioned earlier on about how competitors, we've by necessity have had to partner with competitors. So I'm curious about that too, because are we going to get back to a world where we're suddenly now like being at
a homogenous hospital?
Yeah. Or are we going to get into a world where we're all fighting with each other, Game of Thrones style, you know? What do you think? Where do you think we're going to go?
You know, I think we're going to end up back to, you know, from a brand standpoint, I think we're going to be probably a little kinder, you know, because I think some of these folks have started working together for really the first time and really had a common cause, a common enemy to fight against. But I do think that ultimately, you know, marketing is about brand differentiation. It's about growth. It's about volume. So yes, at some point, the gloves will be put back on. And I think marketers will start to go at it again from a messaging and a differentiation standpoint and a competitive advantage standpoint. Just things that they haven't been able to really focus on these last couple of years.
Yeah. They've kind of been silent in the market about that. In my opinion, I think you're right. We're going to get back to this more of a competitive differentiation, like all the things that you talked about. But I have a feeling, though, that the tone is going to be a little bit different, because I think that the general public is going to be more aware of the fact that the role that all the hospitals provide to their community. And so I'm just wondering if you know, from your perspective, do you think that if there's anything from a branding platform perspective or a branding positioning perspective that we have to be cognizant of like the consumer now and what their view on this is?
It's an interesting thought. And I don't know the answer to that. But what I have noticed is that big brands who are seemingly these days going right back at it where they left off are probably, you know, that's the same consumer. I think that they're as aggressive and as competitive as they have been. Will that translate differently to hospitals? You know, I don't know. I think that, you know, maybe, you know, consumers will say, well, you know, these have been my community advocates here for the last couple of years, and I view them differently. But I kind of think that like big brands, hospitals and health system brands are going to once again differentiate and distinguish their messaging and really try to separate themselves from the pack. And to your point, maybe do it in a kinder, maybe less boastful fashion and a little bit more empathetic fashion, because that's really, from the consumer standpoint, to your point, that's really maybe what has lacked is that empathy and that authenticity of messaging. And I hope hospitals and health systems maybe share messaging that isn't quite as technical and boastful, and it's a little bit more human. And maybe that's, you know, the new mindset of the consumer today.
Boy, we've been talking about them doing that, though, for years. I remember you wrote articles years ago that I still reference today.
And yeah, you're right. And I'm still waiting for that day, I guess. And maybe it takes something like this to kind of tear those walls down a little bit of trying to speak in such technical terms and kind of baffle your way, you know, into somebody's mind and more so maybe win their way to their heart and their, you know, and be relevant to their daily life and to their lives in general. And I think that maybe will be an opportunity now, because hospitals and health systems have had to do that the last 2 years. Maybe that is the lesson that carries over.
So I think about hospital branding compared to branding of other industries. Before the pandemic, I can vaguely remember before those times, right? That we were talking about, you know, that the consumer mind shift is shifting, right? And, you know, a lot of it is around access and convenience and easy access to care and all of those things. We know that those things are with the consumer mindset. But I also look at other like CPG brands and other types of industries, and they really double down on like kind of their role in society or their role in making the environment better. I think about like Patagonia and things like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you know, those things seem to be, well, Patagonia maybe is an exception to the rule because they're more aligned with the environment.
Right.
But for like industries like Coca-Cola and other ones that really are more like product focused, it felt a little flat. I think that with hospitals and health systems, they've been actually demonstrating, living their vision, right? Living their mission for the last 2 years because of necessity, to the point where they've been busting at the seams. I mean, it's so difficult. I have a feeling that's going to be a very strong resonator for the community when you know, as they start to, I guess what a shorthand I'm trying to say is, they probably don't have to do a lot of convincing that your healthcare brand is serving the community because they've been demonstrating it for 2 years.
Right. And exactly. And let's just hope that from a branding and a messaging standpoint, they remain as relevant in the consumers' lives in the future as they have these past couple of years, because what you're saying is exactly that they have been relevant, useful, and meaningful to these individuals every day. And, you know, that's kind of what I hope will carry over as we move forward.
So another thing that I'm seeing, Rob, with hospitals and health systems, there's been certainly a push around equity, diversity, inclusion,
yes,
that is impacting health systems. And I know that that's a big part of the brand as well. What's your perspective on that?
Well, my perspective is you're exactly right. That, and I can tell you that over the past couple of years, more hospital and healthcare have inserted that language into their mission statement than ever before. And where it used to be regardless of ability to pay, it's now regardless of color and religion and, you know, anything like that. And those words specifically are being weaved into healthcare mission statements, a lot of because of what's happening around us culturally. Every hospital association is taking, you know, health equity and racial disparities very seriously. It's becoming one of the top five strategic initiatives for most organizations. And yes, I think a lot of that has stemmed out of some of the incidents and again, cultural sensitivity to it that we have today.
You know, what's interesting too about that, though, is it's always been there, at least in the, you know, 20 years now, I guess, that I've been in the industry, you a little bit more than me. I think it's always been there. It's just never been overtly presented, right?
It has not, no. And to a certain degree, I don't know if it's been, you know, kind of unified like that in terms of always being there. I think that, you know, certain markets and organizations more so than others. But the other thing that's interesting is that, you know, new studies are being funded. For example, you know, we're working with a medical association today that is actually investigating and exploring their own members' knowledge and treatment in terms of racial disparities and how certain, you know, food and allergies and so forth impact people of color. And they've never done that before. So, you know, even from a medical association standpoint, it's really just becoming front and center. I find that to be pretty exciting and pretty, you know, pretty inclusive.
Absolutely. And I think that really speaks well, right? That
yeah, totally.
We are now getting the voice behind us. Again, you know, 20 years ago when I started in this industry, you know, we were talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, but just not at the point where it kind of made its way into overtly into our mission statements. But now it's there. And it's sort of reinforcing that commitment we have as health systems, as health associations, you know, to serving our communities that much better. Rob, when you and I first started talking about getting you back on the show, you used this term. You said, you know, I think what I wanted to, you actually said to me, I want to talk about when marketing can unmask itself again. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, interestingly, you know, now figuratively speaking, I'm going to say in the next, you know, maybe 6 to 9 months, marketing will be able to move away from some of the COVID-related messaging that we've talked about and some of that community, you know, that strength positioning in favor of, you know, more traditional service line marketing brand differentiation. And then literally speaking, you know, what I find is I'm often asked, you know, when can we feature, like the literal, when can we feature people in our work, in videos and images without wearing, who are not wearing masks? And, you know, so that's kind of what I was referring to. I'm thinking, you know, it's interesting, you know, when can we unmask marketing? When can marketing, you know, kind of take the mask off and really start to create a persona for each individual organization? And that's, you know, again, 6 to 9 months out, I think we're going to start seeing that again. From the literal standpoint, which again, I find kind of funny is, you know, when can we, you know, show people who aren't wearing masks? You know, I guess it's probably the same time period. You know, I'm already seeing a lot of advertising from big brands. And when I say, you know, advertising, you know, digital, online, so forth, people are just going about their business. You know, we're not seeing that same sensitivity to it as we did 6 months ago. And on the other hand, I'm not sure that, you know, the average Jane, you know, consumer is looking at it that hard. It seems as though, you know, more images and videos and so forth are being out there now with people, you know, again, living their life. And it might be a little ahead and more aspirational, but I think that, you know, I think hospitals and health systems, some here in the Chicago market already show that, but I think, you know, another 6 to 9 months, if everything continues, we'll start taking the mask off from that standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting about that, Rob, as you talk about that, I think that, you know, this is another way that health systems can kind of take the lead. We kind of announced the challenges of the pandemic. We've been kind of at the forefront of that. As we start to pivot back to whatever the sense of, I don't want to use that term, but I'll use it, new normal. I think that if health systems start to, you know, communicate that, that's going to be one that's very much receptive to the audiences out there.
Yeah, I would agree. I think people, you know, again, I think it's aspirational. I think it's where people want to be and how they want to see themselves, you know, like I said, you know, hopefully 6 months or so. So I do think that, yeah, you're right, that will be again, a way to be culturally relevant in people's lives.
That really is kind of another way that we could kind of lead with our brand, right? We kind of lead the community at large.
Yeah, I mean, and if nothing else, it's hope. It's hope, and it's, you know, and to your point, yeah, it's an indication of where things either are or where they're going to be. And, you know, hospitals are so sensitive to that right now. And any physician or dental provider, everyone is really, you know, concerned about, you know, showing an atmosphere that's a little more footloose and fancy free than it is. And I think hospital health system providers are going to be the last ones really to take the mask off. Again, literally speaking, but I do think that, you know, a little bit more, you know, symbolically, it does again show how we're becoming way more culturally relevant in our communities and among our, you know, our constituents than ever before. And to me, that's, you know, a place hospitals and health systems have just not been. So, you know, again, maybe that's one of the benefits that come out of this.
That I like that a lot. I like thinking about it that way. So, Rob, this has been a really interesting conversation. Is there anything else that maybe you could, that hospitals and health systems should consider as they, you know, kind of look at where they're at now and moving forward?
I'm glad you asked me that. I recently wrote an article on customer reactivation. You know, hospitals and health systems and most businesses really kind of look at either customer acquisition or customer retention. And, you know, there's this whole new category as a result of this called customer reactivation. And it's kind of driven by, you know, the idea that your customers or your patients, they're not going to competitors. They're just not going. And so reaching out to patients who have kind of gone under the rock for the last couple of years and have deferred their appointments, maybe put off certain things, that's going to be a real hot area for hospital and health system marketers to get more involved in this personalized communications to bring back those individuals, to make them feel safe and comfortable in the right environment, and that it's okay to start getting their healthcare back on track. So again, it's not like, you know, we're losing these patients out of, quote, the system. We're just, you know, they're not doing anything. That's our big competition. Reaching back and really positioning the health system as, you know, as the right place to come back to, and your physician, your providers, and so forth, I think is going to be a real hot area.
You know, I remember we were talking again, early stages, about this whole concept of return to care. This certainly seems like we're on the precipice, again, once we get past this latest surge, to really reach out to the people that have the highest affinity with us, right? Those people that we provided good care for before, and say, yeah, it's safe. Come on back. Return to care.
Yeah. And even those who, you know, in our own database, and you know more than anybody, you know, the power of CRM and the power of the ability to reach these individuals who show up as not as being dormant. Well, you know, again, it's not like we've lost them. It's just they're not doing anything. And we need to be the ones to kind of convince them to get back on their health journey and do the right things in order to provide that kind of care. And I think that before we start looking at acquisition or new patients or retention of current patients, I think we have to start looking at, you know, former patients and really starting to re-engage with them. And that's a huge sensitivity and I think a big opportunity.
That's so true. Well, you know, I'm leaving this conversation feeling very excited and enthusiastic about the future here, Rob. Thank you for giving me a good positive viewpoint.
I'm glad to do that. I hope that is the case. And, you know, we're talking now when, you know, the things are just a touch on the decline. So maybe there is a reason for that optimism after all.
Well, we could always do with more optimism. But, you know, as we're ending our conversation today, people that are listening in may want to continue on that conversation with you. What are ways that they could find you online?
Well, easily, certainly email me at rob@springboardbrand.com. I'd be happy to talk with anybody or exchange ideas back and forth. Or the company can be found at springboardbrand.com online. And you'll find everything from our blog posts to other news related to this and other topics. So absolutely.
Awesome. Well, Rob, thank you so much for your time today. Good conversation. Always good. And I look forward to our next one.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me and continued success with your show.
Special thanks to Rob for coming on the show. I was going to try to look and see how many times it's been, but I know it's been a handful of times he's been on the show. I always appreciate his willingness to come spend a few minutes, take time out of his day to impart some wisdom. And this was great.
Yeah, I think this is his fourth time on the show today.
Fourth.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a handful.
Yeah, it is.
Well, very cool. So again, quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health. We mentioned earlier about signing up for the TPS report. That obviously comes with 5 articles, come out every Monday morning, start your week, which is great. Also, down at the bottom of that email, there'll be a couple of links to upcoming conferences. So if you're thinking about education, whether that be virtual or in person or kind of what's coming down the pipe, it's a great way to kind of have that in front of you each week and keep that top of mind for some of that continuing ed planning you may be doing. So again, sign up if you would, rate, review, subscribe, all that kind of fun stuff. Let's do a couple of recommendations and we'll wrap the show up.
Reed, I am going to recommend this week another television program that came from a podcast.
Okay.
Before I tell you the name of it, because you might recognize it, because I actually think I might have recommended the podcast many years ago. Starring in this miniseries, it's like an 8-part miniseries. Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd.
Oh.
And the podcast / miniseries is called The Shrink Next Door.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this podcast from Wondery, right? I think I recommended it a number of years ago.
Yeah.
About a person who starts seeing a psychiatrist in New York. And over the course of that relationship between him and his psychiatrist, the psychiatrist starts to become involved in his business, becomes involved in his personal money matters. They actually start a business or a foundation together. The psychiatrist moves into the house next to him. And it devolves. And Will Ferrell plays the lead of Marty Markovitz, who is the lead of the show. And Paul Rudd plays Dr. Isaac Hirschkopf, who's his psychiatrist. It's a serious miniseries, right? Because this is a serious topic. There is a little bit of humor in it. But I tell you, just seeing them interact together, you wouldn't even know it, you know, that it is Will Ferrell of, you know, Elf or whatever, right? And Paul Rudd of Ant-Man.
No way.
It's like a really great thing. It's on Apple TV, an 8-part series. If you have Apple TV, you can go check it out. I strongly recommend it. Each episode is about maybe 35 to 40 minutes long. So it's completely bingeable if you want to. And it's really great, nicely done, and really, really an interesting show. And it made me try to remember back to how it all ended. And I'm telling you, it's great. So that's my recommendation. The Shrink Next Door miniseries. And if you're interested, go back and listen to the podcast too, because it's really good.
Man, that's great. I just made a note here to look that up. So that'll be awesome. That's a great recommendation. I'm going to recommend a podcast. There's a network of podcasts called Pushkin. And I think I've recommended Malcolm Gladwell's podcast, Revisionist History, before. One of us has. So it's on that network called Pushkin, but it's called Deep Cover. And so Deep Cover, the show, is about people that lead double lives. And season 2 of Deep Cover is called Mobland. So season 2, Deep Cover, Mobland, is about a high-rolling lawyer who joins forces with the feds to bring down one of the most powerful crime syndicates in the country. So it's a real story about this lawyer out of Chicago. So anyway, if you like mob stuff, you like, you know, the double secret lives and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, it's really good. I have not actually listened to season 1. It's actually called Drug Wars, which is about an FBI agent who goes undercover with a biker gang. So anyway, I may have to actually go back and check that one out. But Deep Cover, name of the podcast, the newest season 2, is called Mobland.
I just added it to my podcast app. And I tell you, the cover art is amazing, too.
So yeah,
it's definitely good. Check it's it out. Yeah. This looks really great. Sure. Oh, what a great recommendation, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, good show. Again, thanks to Rob for coming on. I think it's a great topic as we think about starting a new year purpose, obviously, in our personal lives as well as professional lives, because something we think about. So this is a great topic to kind of lean into. Again, rate, review, subscribe wherever you happen to be listening. We certainly appreciate that. Tell a friend, tell a coworker. We'd love to hear from you. Twitter, LinkedIn, reach out. If there's a topic we should cover, somebody we should have on the show, let us know. For Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.